K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning, K-Mud listeners. We are in Mindful Mud here, Mindful Mud Land. And thanks for joining. Mindful Mud is your talk show talking about all kinds of different ways of bringing more mindfulness into your daily life and living a more conscious life. And my guest today is Hannah Nielsen. Hannah Nielsen is an eco-psychologist, eco-chaplain, and climate educator with more than a decade of experience in the environmental field. After years working in climate policy, fieldwork, and education, they turned their focus towards the emotional and spiritual dimensions of the climate crisis. Through their new business, Eco-Psychology Connection, and their work with the Good Grief Network's 10-step program, they help individuals and community process climate grief, build resilience, and reconnect with the living world. Welcome, Hannah, to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. And you're calling in from Eureka, right?
I am, yes.
All right, you're local. I think it's important, especially going into this work and your offerings, for folks to know right away that you're a local resource here for us in Humboldt County. This is really, really wonderful. So, Hannah, I have so many questions about this because I'm very obviously tuned in to our environment. I love our nature, and I'm very concerned like so many others. And so eco-psychology for me is not a field that I'm very familiar with. So I'm really, really curious to kind of dive into, first of all, you know, what are we dealing here, right? Our own grief and the situation of the world and just that sorrow that can bring, and then also going into tools, resources, and your offerings. So I'm really excited, listener, and again, this could be a great show for you, and think about questions you might have for Hannah. She's an incredible resource for us here. So what brought you into eco-psychology, and what made you realize that climate work also needs emotional and spiritual support?
Yeah, so thanks for first mentioning that eco-psychology is kind of a new term for a lot of people. Whenever I share with others that I got my master's in eco-psychology, no one knows what that means, so you're not alone. And I'll share a little bit about what that field entails. But just to share a little bit about my background and why I chose this direction is I live in Humboldt, but I actually was also raised in Humboldt. So I grew up in Arcata and have always been really connected to the natural world. So even from a young age, I knew that my path, my career was going to be focused around environmental conservation, environmental protection. I didn't know how that would look. And as you shared in my bio, I tried out a lot of different fields to see how I wanted to help in that way. And it was through doing work in environmental education and working with young climate professionals, and then having been a young climate professional myself, that I realized that there really was not a lot of resources available to support people with the spiritual, psychological, emotional toll of looking at the climate crisis day in and day out. And I think that this plays heavily a lot on environmental professionals, but I think it's not just environmental professionals. It's really everyone that is connected to the earth that cares deeply, and it shows up in different ways for different people. And so I decided to go back to school to pursue eco-psychology and also to pursue eco-chaplaincy, which is a similar field to eco-psychology, to look at how we could actually help support people looking at building their resilience around facing the environmental crisis. Because I think what happens, and I noticed in myself as well, is that when we don't have those resiliency skills to be able to support ourselves when we're looking at the crisis, it can feel so overwhelming and so daunting, and we can just move into paralysis and shut down and just continue living business as usual, which I think is a completely normal response, because a crisis such as the climate crisis feels so daunting. How do we even start? So I really wanted to look at how can we look at the human element of dealing with these crises, and also how do we support each other in community. So that's why I went back to school to focus on eco-psychology, which looks at how humans evolved with the natural world, not separate. So in mainstream or traditional psychology, we look at how our family relationships or romantic relationships impact our psyche. Eco-psychology expands that to look at how our connections with the more than human world also impacts our psyche, and then how we can move into repair to live in a healthier way on the planet.
That's, yeah, so speaks to me, because we see this everywhere, right? How do we deal with that balance of really nurturing ourselves? And I think, and then we are resourced to give or to change or to feel inspired to do something. And I feel like we're living in such a time, or society, I should probably say. I don't think it's in every culture like that, but in such a society that it's all about pushing, right? And just do. And it's, yeah, the shutdown is right around the corner, right? Because we can't, we're human beings.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that in, that not every culture interacts in this way with the planet, with each other. And I think that that's really important when we're looking at the field of eco-psychology, because eco-psychology in the academic world is fairly new. It's been around since the 1990s. But a lot of the values that influence eco-psychology have been around forever. So looking at how we're interconnected and part of the natural world, values of reciprocity with nature, a lot of these values within eco-psychology have been influenced by traditional ecological knowledge, and a lot of indigenous cultures and other cultures that aren't our mainstream dominant Western culture right now do have different ways of relating. But eco-psychology has just started to kind of take off within academia. So I think it's important to bring that in too, that there are lots of different ways of relating, but right now we are in this moment where the dominant paradigm has a very toxic message about how we're connected to the earth, how we're connected to each other, how we relate on the planet. And I think that what we're seeing is a need, a desire to shift that narrative so that we can relate in a healthier way and we don't continue down this path, which towards, you know, we're living in the time of the sixth mass extinction and huge biodiversity loss. So we need some major shifts. And I think that what really called me to this work as well is looking at the underlying reason that we've gotten to this place, that in the time that we are on the planet, what are the values that have brought us here?
What do you think, those are? Yeah. That's a very that's a very interesting way of looking at it. Yeah. How did we end up here?
Yeah. So I think that with eco-psychology, a big value is looking at how we have this core wound of disconnection from the earth. And when we don't see, we've moved away from seeing the earth as a living being, as ourselves as part of the earth, we see ourselves as separate, then it's easy for us to use and abuse and just see the earth as a resource to extract. And that's the direction that we've gone, unfortunately. Instead of respecting the earth, being in relationship with a give and take, I think that we as humans and dominant society have been in a very extractive relationship with nature. Which also bleeds out not just to the environment. I really believe that this work, looking at our relationship to the earth, also connects to how we relate to each other, how we relate to ourselves. When we have this core wound of disconnection from the earth, seeing ourselves as separate, we lose track of a deep part of who we are. And we also lose track of our connection to each other. So I think that we've lost track of our interconnection, and we are living in a dominant societal model of individualism and seeing ourselves as separate, which also then doesn't allow us to see how deeply our actions impact each other and the earth. And then when we don't see how we're interconnected, we don't see how when we harm the earth, when we harm another person, we are also harming ourselves. So for me, that's really at the core. And I believe that we need all the technological solutions and we need to focus on policy. But I think that without also looking at the root of how we got here, all of those solutions will ultimately just be a band-aid. And for a deep shift, which is what I think we really need, we also need to look at the root of why we got here in the first place and how we can shift into a different way of being in relation with the earth and each other.
This is so right on, Hannah. Yeah, absolutely. It's you bring so much up. Like, I'm just even thinking right now, we're bombing oil fields. We're going into a war again, right? For what? For oil, for extraction. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes so much disconnect. It takes such a sick system to even end up there, right? And I think a lot of us feel that way of like, how? And you naming that core wound, right, is really, I'm so glad you're naming the real source here. And it takes personal work, I'm hearing here, right?
It takes Absolutely. Personal work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not a quick fix. I think that we're also used to wanting to see repair quickly or to see things shift quickly. And this deep work that we need to do is a lot about unlearning and reconditioning our values, because a lot of what we have been conditioned to believe isn't working is destructive. And so it really, in order to question our assumptions and our biases and our perceptions, that's deep work. That's hard work. That doesn't change overnight. And it's really interesting because we're at this time where we feel the urgency, we're in this crisis. And yet some of the solutions, some of what we really need is to slow down and be able to be with and examine and do that deep inner work. So that can be challenging. There can be some friction there, and it can feel hard to allow oneself to slow down, to try to do this inner work. But I think that's really what is needed. We do need to ask those hard questions. We do need to sit with discomfort, which is something that is not really taught to us, of how to be with challenging emotions, how to sit with discomfort. And yet I think it's one of the most critical tools and skills that we're called to do during this time.
Exactly. And you know, I'm just thinking here, we all deserve healing, right? And healing doesn't come just from bliss. Often healing goes through some hard times, real deep healing, especially when you're mentioning the core wound, right? And that inner healing will bring a healing into our, of course, we are interconnected. This is the thing. How can we forget that we're part of nature, right? But we do. I mean, mm-hmm. Society sometimes does. Yeah. So from your perspective, what are people actually carrying inside when they say they're anxious about the state of the world? Like, what do you think is it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that anxiety about the state of the world and grief about the state of the world is really an expression of love for the world and a fear for not being able to, feeling disempowered of how to respond. So I think that that's really important to bring up, is that a lot of this work that I've been doing as well is grief work, and that can feel daunting sometimes to people. But I really want to emphasize that grief is just the other side of love, and that when we're moving through grief, it's because we hold love for someone or something or the planet. And so moving towards and embracing those feelings of anxiety or grief really allows one to open up further to then transform those feelings into meaningful efforts or action, or into energy that doesn't paralyze you, but then can actually bring you into more aliveness. And so I think that embracing and just honoring whatever feelings are coming up is really important and crucial during this time.
Yes, and you mentioned that shutdown, right? That overwhelm that can get us into, oh, well, then I'm just going to tuning it all out. What do you feel is the difference between healthy concern or healthy grief even, right, and that overwhelm that gets us into shutdown?
Yeah, so I think we can look at this with looking at our window of tolerance, which is basically we all have a certain zone that our nervous system is regulated and functions in. And so when we move too far into the underwhelm, it shuts us down. Our nervous system, it means that we've gone outside of our capacity, outside of our zone of tolerance. And so I think that's a sign to us that we need to tend to our nervous system. We need to step back. We need to get support, because that means that our body doesn't feel safe.
And like, so when we push ourselves too far.
Yes.
Over our capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a sign that either you need to get support, or also there's different skills and tools that you can do to support your nervous system. But that's an important thing to pay attention to, is our body, what it's communicating to us. So it doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. I think it's completely natural to move into those times of shutdown and paralysis when looking at the crises of the world, because it is completely overwhelming. And I don't think any of us are supposed to be aware of and facing and looking at these sorts of existential threats while alive in our human bodies on this planet. So of course we would have those responses, but I think what we that is the reality, that is the time we're living on. And so the hope is to be able to support our bodies and our nervous systems to be able to learn how to expand that window of tolerance so that we can hold more, and that also we can feel when we're starting to move outside of our window of tolerance and when it's time to step back and take a break. So I don't think this means that, you know, we don't need to be tuned into the news 24/7 or at protests 100% of the time. You know, it's a step back and a step in. Ask for help when you need help, give help when you can give help. So it's this balance, and really about learning what your nervous system needs so that you can show up and when you need to step back.
So important, right? And that is actually part of the whole thing, that stepping back, that taking care of ourselves is part of that bigger part of healing. And you know, it is so true that this whole information overload, right, that we're in, and not just the information overload. That's a huge part, right, of draining us out and making us helpless. Our nervous system can't process all this stuff. And it comes in such small bites, right? And then it comes in visuals, right? And I sometimes, like, really, I read this article the other day, a while ago, actually, about, you know, how some, for instance, Instagram reels or YouTube, it's like these small bites, and then you get like, okay, war pictures, and then the next one is a little kitty, right? And then the next one is another, you know, like beautiful sunset, and then the third one is something about healing. And it's like it goes on, and our nervous system can't process that. Like, what are we even doing with this?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's and also I think that, you know, there may be some method to that madness of when people are shut down, there is less pushback and engagement. And so I think really connection, feeling our emotions, leaning into that work is a form of resistance during this time, because it's the natural response when we're overwhelmed is to shut down. And that keeps us quiet, that keeps us from mobilizing, that keeps us from connecting. And kind of one of the most powerful things that we can do right now is to choose to lean in, to choose to connect, to choose to feel our emotions, to choose to show up in that way. Because when we're shutting down, we're continuing to just exist in the same model, business as usual, things don't shift. But that's really hard, and it's really hard to do that alone. And so that's why I think it's so crucial to do this with community, to have support, to have containers that hold one while you're trying to feel and process, because first of all, we're not taught how to process or be with or sit with challenging emotions. And secondly, what we're being asked to sit with and process right now is a lot. It's really, really hard. And so I think that it's not prudent to try to just show up and do this by yourself. I think that we need each other. We're social creatures. And that's another form of resistance, is leaning into the collective, into community, because within modernity, we have a very individualistic society, which I think is also part of the problem. And when we can group together, come together, we have that support, that strength, that energy, where then we do have the ability to step back when we need to and then step forward. If we're all trying to do it alone, then there's this pressure to always be on, and that's just not natural, and that's not good for our nervous systems.
Well put, Hannah. The collective and the community is so, so needed, right? And I'm having to smile here a little bit, because sitting at the Kmart studio, right, I'm thinking, we call this the resistance radio, right? And it is a family. It is a community, right, that we're having here. And it brings up so much of education and togetherness and also inspiration to actually do something about things that we might not even thought of first, right? Mm-hmm. And really that community building is, as you said, such a resistance tool, and that the community and the internal work. You're speaking really my language, because I say this a lot, right? Internal awareness is the biggest resistance we have. Mm-hmm. Because when we know who we are and who we are in this world, nothing is going to stop us. But yeah, we have to get there first. Like, right? This is a path. This is a training. So let's move into tools and all your incredible offerings you have. So you're mentioning that community, and it really helps us to restore, right, our own inner resiliency and capacity. So let us know some tools, some things you offer. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that's coming up and starting this next week, actually on Thursday, is a 10-step program through the Good Grief Network called 10 Steps to Resilience in a Chaotic Climate. And this is a really beautiful program because it's a cohort model. So it's a peer support. The Good Grief Network is a peer support nonprofit serving individuals and communities experiencing eco distress and collective trauma from social and ecological injustices. And they help build collective resilience, transforming emotional overwhelm into meaningful action. And so this 10-step program is a really beautiful program because you work with the same group of, it's, you know, 8 to 15 people total over 10 weeks. And you meet 2 hours every week and work a different step every week. And the steps move through this arc from starting from accept the severity of the predicament, and then we move into week 2 is be with uncertainty. The last step is reinvest in meaningful efforts. So I can go through each of the steps in a little bit, but just to give an example, each of the steps really asks you to develop skills and tools with how to respond to the poly crisis, to what's happening right now. And we look at different resources. Every participant gets a participant packet that has readings and interviews, videos, and people can engage with the readings as little or as much as they want. So you can do that work the week leading up. And then we come together in community, and it's really just a space to be witnessed, held in a safe container. And also we learn different resiliency skills and nervous system regulation skills, so that while we're dealing with these uncomfortable feelings, we're pushing towards our edge, we are able to also work on regulating our nervous systems. The one thing that's really lovely about this program is that there's no expectation to come with certain views. It's really about holding everyone where they're at. So the first step, accept the severity of the predicament. That might look very different to each participant, and that's okay, because it's about just witnessing. There's no crosstalk or talking back. It's just having a safe space to hold that person's experience. And what we found is that having that space to be heard and witnessed around these topics can be really healing, because a lot of people come to these spaces and they feel very alone. They're holding a lot of grief or anxiety about the state of the world, about the climate crisis, and they feel like they're the only one feeling it, or we're not talking about these topics as much in our day to day. And so the relief that can come from just being in a group of people that maybe you've never met before and just feeling seen and held and heard can be so transformative. So I've run this program 4 times now, and I was a participant once as well. And I found every time by the end of the 10 weeks, there's a whole community that has formed. Often it's strangers that have come together and don't know each other. And by the end, it's a real community that feels safe together.
Nice.
So this one is actually offered online.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be facilitating actually through the Good Grief Network organization with another Flow facilitator, which is actually a pretty cool opportunity because you'll be connecting with people from all over. It's actually worldwide. So sometimes we have participants not in the United States that also calling in to do the program. And I have, I think, yeah, 3 of the 4 times I've run this program has been online, and it works just as well. So this one will be online. I do hope to run another in-person program some point later this year. So if you are interested but would rather do an in-person portion, just reach out and I'll have more information about that on my website in the near future.
That's fantastic. And as you said, you have been doing this for a few times, and isn't it like my experience when a group comes together in a safe space and having like that openness towards a certain pain or a certain, right? There is magic that happens. There is literally magic when we come together, and it's not just the words, it's not just the training. It's that interconnectedness that does so much. And I really feel in the next 10 years that interconnectedness also biologically, I think we will understand way more what is actually happening when we're together in a room with somebody, but even on Zoom, right? In a room, mm-hmm. like when we see each other, when we are connecting with each other, when we're opening our hearts to each other, there is such an incredible thing happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really feels like a balm to the chaos of the times. And also what's felt so beautiful about this program is it feels like a practice ground for us to come together and try out new ways of being that are different than the dominant paradigm, different than mainstream culture, which are so needed. And we don't have many spaces to do that kind of work in community together. And also for a period of time like that of consistency, of having 10 weeks with the same people, really allows that safety to develop with the group. So yeah, I've just found this kind of work for me to be so soothing and hopeful. It's what gives me hope for the future, is when we have those points of connection, when we're able to gather with others and really dive in deep and do that in our work together. And then it gives me that strength to continue to show up.
I so hear you there. Right, I'm almost daily surprised at the human goodness and the human capacity and the human intelligence, if we are making space for it and if we let ourselves dig in there, even in the uncomfortable, especially in the uncomfortable places, because there is such treasures to be found and such wisdom to be found if we open these doors. Yeah. So you have these, it's a 10-week program, and there's each week a different topic, and then people get videos and reading materials, and you get kind of deeper and deeper into the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe it would be helpful for me just to share what each of the weeks looks at.
Sure.
Do we have time? I know we're also.
Yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first week is accept the severity of the predicament, which again, it's not just the climate crisis. You could come, you know, as this work really looks at how interconnected everything is systemically. The second week is be with uncertainty. The third week is honor my mortality and the mortality of all, which can be a heavy topic given that we have a pretty grief illiterate society, but this is so important for us to be able to kind of move past and work with any sort of fear that we have around mortality. Number four is do inner work. Number five is develop awareness of biases and perception. Number six is practice gratitude, seek beauty, and create connections, which I love this step because we also need the joy, right? We need to do this inner work, but we also need the joy, the beauty, the connection to sustain us, or we will just burn out. So that's been an important step for me to lean into and realize while doing this work. Number seven is take breaks and rest, which also is kind of anti-modernity mainstream society that tells us that we need to be busy and productive all the time. Eight is grieve the harm I have caused. Nine is show up. And 10 is reinvest in meaningful efforts, which is a really beautiful last step because it asks the participants to redefine what meaningful efforts means to them. And after we've gone through these 10 weeks, that might look different than what they would have thought at the beginning. And then through that, kind of make some commitments to reinvesting and putting their energy towards that and in a way that feels life-affirming and life-giving. So those are the 10 steps. And obviously, there's a lot to them. So this isn't just like a program that you do once and you're done with. It's something that you could take over and over again. You could keep coming back to. There's actually a beautiful book that the founders wrote that goes into each of the steps in detail. So that's why, you know, I've done this program five times as a participant, and I get something out of it every time, and I'm just able to keep going deeper.
Because how can you like cross off topics like deal with mortality, right? This is nothing right. You're going to ever like checkbox, you know, none of these topics. This is exactly. An internal process. Yeah. Like every real good work is complicated, is deep, and it keeps going. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. And you're actually also having a business as eco-psychologist, right, Hannah?
Yeah, so this is kind of my soft launch here.
Yay!
So I really feel excited to move into doing more of this work around both supporting people and reconnecting to the natural world and bringing ourselves as human beings back into right relationship with the earth, and then also to help people process and metabolize their emotions about the climate crisis and the state of the world. So I've really been creating since I graduated last year. I've been creating this new business called Eco-Psychology Connection that's really focused on those two things, with the third being doing this all with community in mind of trying to create community spaces for people to do this work. And I'm really excited to launch my new business here, talk about it. And it's still growing. I'm still developing it and figuring out, because I really would love to collaborate with other organizations in the community, but really excited to start doing more of this work and bringing more of my offerings out into the community because I think it's really needed right now. I just feel like this, what's happening on the planet is impacting all of us in some really profound ways, and we need each other more than ever. And we need the natural world, we need the earth more than ever as well to lean into that relationship with nature as well. I think that that's a resource that is untapped, and I really want to help people refining that connection. That's all of our inherent birthright. We're part of it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So I just want to open up officially the phone lines here. If you have questions for Hannah Nielsen, eco-psychologist, my guest today on Mindful Mud. You were talking about leaning into nature, right, and also the beauty. So are you thinking about also doing nature-related practices in your business or like groups? Like tell me more.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the offerings that I am providing, one of them is doing nature-based meditation, which I did last year at Redwood Roots Farm, and that's really helping people come into presence and connection with the land and seeing themselves through that practice as part of the earth, as in relationship, and also just helping regulate our nervous systems, taking a moment to come into ourselves. And I see that we have
a question. Yeah, we have a caller. And I want to go back to the nature meditation mm-hmm. because I'm all over it. Caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Mindful Mud.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, am I on?
Yes,
hi,
you are.
Hi, I had a question about the 10-step program, the Good Grief Network. Mm-hmm. I know that it deals a lot with community building and getting in touch with, like, not only your mind and body. I was wondering, like, how could we incorporate those kind of steps into, like, our community around us? I live in a place that's a pretty, like, hustle and bustle, like, city. So, like, for me, community is, like, I don't even really know my neighbors as well as I should. So I was hoping, like, in some way how I can, like, incorporate this kind of, like, mindset and thinking into reaching out to the people in my direct community.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you so much. And also, this is something that I've been thinking a lot about with the 10 steps, because what I find is with a lot of programming like this, we have a start point and an end point, and then the program's over, and we don't know what happens to the after. Like, what are people doing with what they've learned? How are we integrating that information into our day-to-day life? And I think that, first of all, around your question, I think you're already on the right track. You've already identified, you know, being more connected to your neighbors is a really important first step to building that community. But I think programs like the 10-step program can be really powerful to have that support with the participants that you've gone through something like this, to support each other after the 10 steps is done, to show up in those meaningful efforts that you've identified that you want to do in your life. So, for example, if that's an effort that you've decided, I feel like really isolated and I need more community in my life, that can feel daunting sometimes to follow through. And so having this cohort or having a group that after you stay connected and you support each other with these actions that you've dedicated or decided to work on can be really supportive and helpful. I'm really interested in looking at how do we support people in integrating these kind of practices into their lives. That's what I did my thesis on in grad school, actually. And really what we find is that, and this is kind of paradoxical, is that integration is really supported. So integration meaning being able to kind of absorb the lessons that we've learned and embody them. So then that's exactly what you're talking about with this question. How do we integrate these lessons, these practices into our daily lives? What supports integration is actually community. That's a big component. And it's this kind of paradoxical catch-22, because the challenge is we don't have enough community. We're trying to build community. And I think that we've almost lost track of how to build community, and the community is what supports that integration. So I would say that it's just, starting from the ground up and doing those little steps of connecting with your neighbors around common interests, or if you did a program like this, staying connected with the cohort of people that have shared values and want to do this work so you can support each other. And that's what my kind of also want to do with my business as well, is I'm really want to help support that integration practice. So when I ran this 10-step program in person, we continued to meet after. We would have dinners at each other's houses once a month we've kind of dropped off from that. And I hope we can pick back up. But I think that's so important, is that those communities that you've developed that hold those shared values that you can lean on, you can support each other and then continuing to reinvest. Does that help answer that question?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the conversation as it is. I don't usually call, so like when you guys were talking about getting reconnected with like your nervous system and just how I've been feeling for the last like couple of months, especially with like the things that are going on in the world and just feeling out of whack in place and really missing having like people, my community around me.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally relate. Thank you for calling in and sharing.
Yes, thank you so much. So Hannah, there's a space in that workshop, right?
There is.
Yeah, so how can people sign up?
We do have a couple spaces. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can either go to my website, ecopsychologyconnection.com, and reach out there, or you can also sign up through the Good Grief Network. And I think they have a direct registration link, but if you're having a hard time finding that, just reach out to me at ecopsychology.com.
Very good. And we're going to give all these informations out at the end of the show again, for sure. Connection, community building. I so hear you with sometimes it fades away, something that we really hold dear and that was so good. And then life gets busy and we lose those connections. It happens so easy. Like, for instance, once in a while I teach a mindfulness course, a 6-week mindfulness course, for instance, and folks, you know, really connect during that time of practice and sharing. And so right now my mindfulness courses, it's like at least we meet once a month now, right? Because we just want to keep that going, as you said, like, or do a dinner, right? And I want to encourage everybody, really reach out, build community, and then don't let them slip away. Like, make it a serious priority. It's so easy to get swept away with busyness and then feel empty and wonder why, you know, and confused and lonely. And we need each other, and we can do so much more together. It's like incredible what happens, right? Again, I'm always just mind blown what happens when we get together and just even practice something together that we all are passionate about. There is something happening that's deeply, deeply, deeply healing on all levels. Yeah, I want to go back to nature meditation, but before that, I actually came across a really great quote yesterday from Bill McKibben, right? Probably most of you know Bill McKibben. And he says, "What can I as an individual do? Stop thinking as an individual." I thought, you know, I'm sharing that. Yeah, what can we do? Stop thinking as an individual, because we're not.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of another quote, if
yes,
I can share.
With,
So Thich Nhat Hanh, who was a Vietnamese Buddhist teacher and practitioner, said the next Buddha will be a Sangha, which Sangha is basically a Buddhist community of practitioners. And so, that just calls to me so much. I feel like that's what's needed right now. We need to relearn what it means to actually be in community. And I also just want to name that it's not easy work when all of the structures are set up in a way to support individualism. So if you're struggling with it, it's completely natural and you're not alone. It's sort of going against the grain. And so I just really want to honor that, because I think that is something that we're all craving, and yet you really have to fight for it, which is not how it should be.
It should just be a no-brainer that everybody meets at the town square, right? Every evening, or around the fire or whatever. Yeah, I think we need to get back there somehow. Mm-hmm. So with your business, you mentioned nature meditation. So is that something you're going to keep doing?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to start those up again outside when the weather becomes good again, because it's really so lovely to do it outside. There's something extra special about it. And I really loved doing it at Redwood Roots Farm, because there's such a beautiful land where so much food is grown to nourish the community. So I just love the thought of kind of giving back some of that energy to the land that's nourishing the community and feeling that connection. And you know, how lovely to kind of feel that connection and then gather food and go feed yourself with that food. You know, I just, so that's such a special place for me. I've also been talking with Laura Johnson from A Restful Space, who does really beautiful community work as well, about holding some meditations there before the weather gets good, because it's an indoor space. So that's an offering that, you know, is hopefully going to start up soon. Another thing is, I have training, which we haven't even talked about, as an eco chaplain, which is a similar thread to eco psychology, but a different flavor. It's basically chaplains help people when they're in crisis or transition reconnect to their spirituality. And so an eco chaplain would do that in relationship to people dealing with eco anxiety, eco grief, natural disaster, or just using the relationship with the earth as a spiritual resource. And so I have another offering of, you know, connecting with people in that way as an eco chaplain, and that can look different depending on what's needed. So that could be just sitting with people and talking, chaplaining, or leading nature connection practices, ritual, meditation, exercises with the land. So there's lots of different ways that that shows up, and I'm excited to start doing more of those offerings too. That's also a newer field. I'm part of an organization that's about to launch with eco chaplaincy as well. It's the Buddhist Eco Chaplaincy Association. So we're just about to launch our website there, but really hoping, you know, all of these fields are developing because we're at this critical time where we need it so much. People are feeling it. We need that support and those resources. So they're newer fields, but it's also, they're pulling on wisdom that's been around forever. And, you know, just, it's, they're new fields for a dominant society. And, but the sort of, these kind of practices have been essential for us as humans for a long time.
It's so, such hopeful work, such like, I'm so glad you're here spreading that and doing these offerings, right? It's group and individuals. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, as I said, I really feel strongly that that community element is really helpful and essential, but I think that there is something too about supporting people one-on-one that is helpful depending on what you're looking for. So I do both. Another thing that I offer is integration support. So like what we were talking about with, if someone has gone through a deeply transformative experience, or, you know, gone to a meditation retreat, or done something like the Good Grief Network or some other project, and they're having a hard time or not knowing how to integrate kind of those lessons into their daily life. Again, that's what I studied in grad school. That's what I did my research on. And I think that it's something that is so helpful to have someone to guide you through that process and support you, because a lot of this work is really countercultural. And so we do this deep transformative work, and then we come back to our daily life, and it can sometimes get lost because we just have to go back to the hustle and bustle to put food on the table. And so having someone to hold that container, that space, to help you really be able to integrate those lessons and experience so that it's embodied, so that you can bring it into your daily life, I think is so helpful.
So helpful. Holding space. I like how you, it's really important. We need each other, right? To remember what's important. Yes. Oh, there was so much that, so perhaps just going back to basics, like let's say somebody's listening right now. It's like, where do I start if I'm overwhelmed? Mm-hmm. What can I do to get out of that? Or do you have some suggestions?
Yeah. So I think it depends what kind of overwhelm. So if it's about feeling overwhelmed, nervous system, needing nervous system support and regulation, I would definitely say finding mindfulness practice, finding practice with the land. I would say even, you know, it sounds so simple, but just taking, unplugging and going and sitting on the land is just like a really easy, basic first step.
It is true. It's part of creating that web and feeling mm-hmm. connected, for sure. Yeah. Any last words, Hannah? Like,
Yeah, I would say if you have any curiosity to reach out to my website or reach out to me, I would love to discuss how this landed with you. As I said, it's a new business, so I'm really wanting to connect with people, collaborate, and just have these conversations is so important. And there's lots of different ways that people can plug into this work. I'm going to be co-facilitating a grief ritual at the Humble Unitarian Universal Fellowship in April. So that will be listed on my website, which would could be a beautiful way to get plugged in. I know, as I mentioned again, like grief work is really, it's about love. So if it feels intimidating, that word grief, I invite you to maybe be curious. And if that feels like too much as well, I think finding a community to sit with, to do meditation with, so or even just to come together and be outside together right now. But I definitely think if you're feeling overwhelmed, mindfulness, meditation is so soothing for your nervous system and helpful right now as a starting point. And
Right.
then once your
Can
nervous
you?
system is, once your nervous system is regulated and you can start showing up in different ways.
Absolutely, absolutely. So can you spell your website for folks to really be able to get it?
Yes. Yeah, it's ecopsychoconnect.com. Sorry, I'm not
Dot
that too
com.
well.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah,
Eco
got enough
psychology.
trans
Yeah.
there.
Ecopsychologyconnection.com.
Yes,
It's
thank
a
you.
beautiful website, and yeah, I want to encourage everybody to reach out to Hannah, find support, and if you're down here in Southern Humboldt, you know where to find me and my offerings in as a sangha, in meditations, in mindfulness practices. And by the way, I was just yesterday, I think, talking 2 days ago, talking with our park person down here, Soham Park, to do some nature meditations down here. How cool would that be? So if you're
Lovely. I
interested in
love
that,
that.
stay tuned.
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.